Hello, and welcome to the Paxson & Whitfield Cheese Podcast. I'm Hero Hirsch, and in this month's episode, we'll be looking in detail at one of Europe's most ubiquitous cheeses, Parmigiano Reggiano. We'll be talking about the history and the economic importance of the cheese, and we'll also be talking to a renowned ager of Parmesans, Giorgio Crivero. Let's start with the name, as this is certainly an area where we get a lot of questions in the shops. I've used the name Parmigiano Reggiano, the rather grand-sounding double-barrel name which stems from the production regions of Parma and Reggio Emilia. I've also used the name Parmesan, but what's the difference? Well, the answer depends on where you are. So Parmigiano Reggiano is a PDO cheese, as a protected designation of origin cheese, which is an EU scheme, which means there are strict stipulations regarding the region and the methods of production. Unless these are adhered to, the cheese cannot be called Parmigiano Reggiano. Since 2008, these regulations also apply to the term Parmesan, but only within Europe. So this means that if you're outside of Europe, as many of our podcast listeners are, then cheese labelled as Parmigiano Reggiano is definitely the real deal, whereas cheese labelled as Parmesan might only refer to the style of cheese. As we're recording in London, I will be using the two terms interchangeably today during the podcast to refer to Parmigiano Reggiano. Another name which you might have seen or heard when you're buying this style of cheese is Grana Padano. It's a commonly held view that Grana Padano is a cheaper or inferior version of Parmesan, which is unfair. Both cheeses have a lot of similarities in their methods of production, but the region in which Grana Padano can be produced is much larger, and so more cheese can be produced. Grana Padano also reaches maturity more quickly, so can be produced faster. And both of these factors will have an effect on the price of the cheese. This view that it's inferior has also caused serious upset to the Grana Padano consortium. In 2016, they sued the US soap opera The Bold and the Beautiful for denigrating their cheese after a character realises he's accidentally bought Grana Padano and goes rushing back to the shop to purchase Parmigiano instead. Both of the cheeses have a fascinating history, and I've had some stunning examples of both, but in the interest of keeping the podcast to a reasonable length, I'm going to focus solely on Parmigiano today. Parmigiano is made in the Emilia-Romagna in northwest Italy, specifically in the provinces of Parma, Reggio Emilia and Modena. About 3.5 million wheels of Parmesan are produced each year, and 18% of all the milk produced in Italy goes into Parmesan production. With this scale of production within the region, the cheese is a really significant product, so significant that banks like Credito Emiliano will store up to 300,000 wheels of maturing cheese in their temperature humidity controlled vaults as collateral for loans to the producers. Some banks will even accept cheese as payment for interest on loans. Maybe worth noting that this does not happen if you take a slice of Stilton into a branch of NatWest. The economic significance of Parmesan gained global attention in May 2012 when two strong earthquakes hit the Bologna region. Of the 600,000 cheeses estimated to have been aging at that time, over 300,000 of them were damaged as wooden aging racks that were being stored on collapsed during the earthquake in a sort of domino effect. The wheels had to be cut up and sold immediately, and this was helped in a huge part by the actions of a world-renowned chef called Massimo Bottura. In order to raise awareness of the emergency facing the Parmesan producers of the region, he created and shared a recipe for risotto cacio-pepe, a Parmesan risotto, and he organised a mass online gathering where 40,000 participants prepared the recipe and helped to boost demand for the cheese. The exact specifications for making Parmigiano are some of the most stringent of any cheese. The feed for the animals must be locally grown, and it's made using only raw milk, a mixture of skimmed evening milk and whole morning milk. It can only be made in enormous copper cauldrons, and instead of using a commercially prepared dried starter culture, they can only make this using a proportion of the whey from the previous day's cheese making. What this does is it ensures a continuity in the exact bacterial strains required by the maker, which define the cheese and the flavour profile. It's a little bit like the starter, which is used in sourdough bread making. Once the curd is formed, it's cut down using a giant whisk called a spino to ensure that the cheese has a low moisture content required to give it the firm texture and the long aging period that it needs. The curd has to be cut into absolutely tiny pieces, so about the size of rice grains. This is to release as much of the whey as possible. These grains then sink to the bottom of the cauldron, where they form into a gigantic sort of 100 kilogram mass, which is transferred into like a cloth hammock and then hung up to allow the whey to start draining away. It's at this stage that they then cut the cheese, the 100 kilogram mass, in half, so to make 250 kilogram cheeses. I really quite like this slightly romantic notion here that every wheel of Parmesan has a twin. The 50 kilogram blocks of curd are then put into moulds. It's at this stage that it forms one of its most recognisable features, which is the dot matrix style branding of the name Parmigiano Reggiano, which you'll find in relief on the inner circumference of the mould. So as the curd settles into the mould, this is imprinted on the side of the wheel. They then spend 3 weeks in enormous brine baths, at which stage they're removed and begin the long, slow ageing process, which is where the cheese really begins to develop its character. It has to be aged in the production region for a minimum of 12 months. It will then be inspected by a battitore. This is probably one of the most interesting, obscure and specialised jobs in the cheese industry. It requires years of training and can only be done by a small team who are endorsed by the Consorzio of Parmigiano Reggiano. So these battitore, or beaters, will inspect each individual wheel. They'll slowly rotate it and lightly tap it all the way over with a specially designed cheese hammer. So they'll be listening for the quality. The slightest unevenness in the resonance of the cheese could signify a defect or a fissure in the cheese. Where this happens, the cheese has an ink stamp with a triangular symbol and will never become Parmigiano Reggiano. It would even have the imprinted name on the rind scrubbed off it. The cheeses that pass the testing, though, will be heat branded with the mark of the Consorzio and can be sold immediately or taken on for further ageing.
I wanted to find out more about this next step in the Parmesan process. So a few months ago, I visited the town of Bra in Piemonte, northern Italy, where I met with Giorgio Crivero, who's been selecting and exporting Parmesan for Paxton & Whitfield since 2001. So, Giorgio Crivero, fantastic. Thank you so much for showing me around your facility. It's absolutely incredible. Tell me, how many wheels of cheese are within it?
There are 5,000 cheeses.
5,000. Okay, I believe that, actually. It does. It's incredible to look at.
It's a really good facility, but it's a really small one at the same time.
Is that compared to other similar...
Exactly. We are in Piemonte, in Bra, in Piemonte, northwest of Italy. We are 300 kilometers west of the Parmigiano Reggiano production area.
Mm-hmm.
At the production area, some general caves. General means that there cheeses are matured for different companies. Has room for 150,000, 200,000,
oh, wow.
Alpha okay. million cheeses.
Right,
so our is really a tiny one.
Okay, fantastic. And what processes do you actually do to the cheese? Do you turn it? What happens to it in that 12 plus months it's in your care?
Good question. Crucial one. So first of all, we need to properly check either temperature mm-hmm. and humidity all year round. We use an air condition system
mm-hmm.
that level constant figures that are 18 degrees Celsius for temperature and 70 to 75% of humidity.
Okay.
We use this system just during summertime.
Mm-hmm.
I would say June, July, August, and middle September. For the remaining 9 months, we switch off the air conditioning system. Our rooms are properly built to keep naturally the humidity without the air conditioning system working around 70%.
Okay.
And then, as I said before, during the winter time, letting the temperature drop naturally, we are focused to do things in a slower way than usual.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, the cheese has to be turned
mm-hmm.
often. We do that every 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
very often, to ensure an even slow maturation again inside the cheese. So we turn them every 2 weeks and we don't brush them.
Okay.
We don't brush them.
And they're quite large cheeses. Can you lift one to turn them over? I can't lift
one. I'm sorry. There's something that is going against romanticism. There's a robot.
Oh, they
do the job. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
So you have a cheese turning robot.
Exactly. Since 25 years.
I think
right
there's
now.
Something romantic about that, actually.
But I remember the cheeses turned by hand
mm-hmm.
when I was a kid, and wow, the boys in the caves were like
that
athletes.
Does sound
very
incredibly
strong.
Hard work.
Exactly.
So you're not the cheese maker, but you have these 5,000 wheels of cheese. So tell me, what part in the process do you play?
The Parmigiano Reggiano business is organized since ever, I would say. For sure, since half a century at least. In this way, the producer, located in Emilia-Romagna, make the cheese every day of the year,
mm-hmm.
and they mature their production until the 12th month.
Okay.
When the cheeses are a year old, they sell their production to us,
mm-hmm.
The so-called affiners.
Okay.
In Italian, it's stagionatori.
Okay.
Because maturing the cheese means to let the season pass on, and the season in Italian is called stagione.
Okay.
So the affiners are also called stagionatori.
Okay. I think an affiner is probably a business model less known in the UK. Is that quite common in Italy, or is it unique to Parmigiano?
I would say that it is, in my personal opinion, the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So the affiners, which is English and also affinatori, Italian translation from the word affiner, which is French,
mm-hmm.
Are professionals that with their skill, methods, system of using temperature, humidity in their maturing rooms, are able to interfere and change the taste, the mm-hmm. final taste of the cheese.
Mm-hmm.
For Parmigiano, it's a little bit different because as seasoner, stagionatori, we just wait for the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in general, the interfering with the Parmigiano is a little bit different than other European cheeses.
Mm-hmm. And so, do you have any influence on the final flavor in the cheese?
Absolutely yes, in a way that it's a little bit in contradiction of what I just said.
Okay.
Because here in Bra, we are used since almost 160 years.
Mm-hmm.
We are used to mature our Parmigianos in the most natural way. That means we are not heating our rooms on winter time.
Mm-hmm.
So during the winter time is quite cold.
Yeah.
inside the maturing rooms. January temperature inside the rooms is around 5-6 degrees Celsius, mm-hmm. which is a perfect way to let the maturation slower to arrive at the proper time, that in my opinion is between the 24th and the 30th month, to still have the texture very moist,
mm-hmm.
very creamy, which is connected with a in general, pleasant, sweet taste is our main characteristic. Sometimes I'm also talking about obsession.
Can you actually tell me a bit more about the history of the business? I suppose I don't need to ask how you got involved then.
I wasn't involved on 1855. My great-grandfather, his name was Giorgio, like me.
Mm-hmm.
Founded a family business in Bra. Then the business passed through five generations to until nowadays. My great-grandfather and my grandfather used to be already Parmigiano-Reggiano stagionatori, affiners, but they used to trade also the classic Italian cheeses like Taleggio, Gorgonzola, Fontina, butter also.
Mm-hmm.
Then, 100 years ago, around 1920, my grandfather, again, my name, Giorgio, was the person that decided to focus the business just on Parmigiano Reggiano and mm-hmm. Grana Padano.
Okay. And having a look at one of these sort of incredible looking wheels, I mean, first of all, they're enormous, but there's all sorts of different kind of markings on the outside of the cheese. So what do they all mean? Do they all have a meaning?
At the producer, the same day of the production, a plastic sheet impressed different things
mm-hmm.
on the just made cheese. The little dotting relief
mm-hmm.
For the brand Parmigiano Reggiano.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the rind, in different positions, there are a number
mm-hmm.
which identify, it's a code
mm-hmm.
that identify name and location of the dairy
that
produced the Parmigiano Reggiano.
Okay. And so is it just a three-digit code, that one?
There's either three digits mm-hmm. that identify the cheeses that come from Reggio Emilia province, and four digits comes from the other four provinces.
So the
Parma, Modena, Bologna, and Mantua.
So the code itself will give you a clue as to where the cheese was produced.
Absolutely, absolutely, fascinating. Absolutely.
And if you knew, you know, if if you Google the code, would you be able to track down exactly where?
Absolutely, absolutely.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
And also being a professional, or else a passionate person, through the code you can identify where the cheese is made, and around the production area there are some areas that are considered better than others. So it's
really
interesting.
So if you were, you know, a Parmesan detective, then all the clues are there as to finding the
absolutely
perfect one. I mean, I asked because, and I mentioned a 3-digit code, because the Parmigianos we have at Paxton Whitfield always have the same code, which is 841.
Exactly.
And so does that means that they all come from the same producer?
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Because we try to establish some very constant relationship with the producer we work with, and we work, we select a part of the 841 production non-stop since 1988.
Wow.
31 years.
That's a long relationship.
Exactly. Which is, to be honest, quite unusual for
right.
nowadays standards in Parmigiano Reggiano business. Anyway, and when we began to supply Paxton and Whitfield back to 2001, 18 years ago, we tasted you the 841 Parmigiano Reggiano.
Mm-hmm.
And you liked it, and since then we never changed the producer. So in this way, it's perfect, and it's an easy way to establish our relationship between Cravero, Paxton and Whitfield, and Paxton and Whitfield customers, because they trust you. They come to the shop, buy a chunk of Parmigiano Reggiano. When they come back in 2 weeks, buying exactly the same kind of cheese, they are sure that they can trust you for a long time.
And the consistency, and I think
exactly,
that is really important.
The constant is the consistency.
So Parmigiano is quite often used as an ingredient in cooking. I think a lot of our customers consider it just to be a cooking cheese. I personally love it on a cheese board as well. I like it just as it is. But with the cooking ingredient in mind, do you have like a particular dish or a recipe that you think showcases the cheese best?
This is a very, very complicated question.
Excellent.
Dear hero, because I'm not a chef at all, but I have an answer for you.
Mm-hmm.
So to taste the quality of a good Parmigiano Reggiano, I would prefer option one, the one you mentioned, on a cheese board.
Just eat it as it is.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
On its own with a glass of Prosecco.
Yep, okay. That was my next question.
Right. I'm talking about Prosecco because I'm Italian, so.
Of course.
Could be Franciacorta, could be Altalanga, could be Champagne, could be Cava. Anyway, sparkling white wines. Or, back to the fact that I'm not a chef, cooking some really good spaghetti al dente, and serve them with extra vergine olive oil and some really good 24-month Parmigiano Reggiano grated on it. You can taste if the Parmigiano Reggiano is good or not.
Wonderful. I like that. Just keeping it very, very simple.
Simple indeed.
Cheese by itself is the purest simplicity, but yeah, with a bit of spaghetti. Sounds wonderful. Just coming back to the age question, you said a bit of 24-month Parmigiano. What is the perfect age? Is it 24 months? Because I've seen plenty of people selling much, much older Parmigiano. What do you think about the best age?
Look, I'm not in a position to get some critics against the 18 months Parmigiano Reggiano rather than the 36 months, 48 months, 60 months, which is something that is on the market.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that somebody liked it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm answering you about my personal taste.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because we are obsessed, as I said before, by the creaminess
mm-hmm.
of the texture and the enjoyability of a fruitiness of taste. That happened at 24 months, between 24 and 30 months. This is my personal taste.
Okay.
And this is the one I'm happy to propose.
24 to 30. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Giorgio, thank you so much for your time.
My
I really
pleasure.
Appreciate you answering
my great
questions.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. One of the best known stories about Parmigiano in this country is that the diarist Samuel Pepys buried his cheese along with his gold and his wine in his garden as he saw the Great Fire of London approaching in 1666. A lesser known side to this story was told to me recently by one of our Academy of Cheese delegates who spent 2 days poring over documents in the British Library but found no record of the cheese ever having been dug up again. I think it's quite intriguing to wonder if the cheese is still down there, how it might have developed over 350 years. I'm imagining rind like tree bark and cheese crystals the size of hazelnuts. One of the other lovely historical references to Parmesan comes from The Decameron, a novella from 1351 in which Bengodi, a mythical happy place, is being described thus. They have there a whole mountain of grated Parmesan, and the people who live on it do nothing all day but make gnocchi and ravioli and cook it in capon broth. Lovely. If your happy place centres around a mountain of Parmesan, visit one of our stores to try a chunk, selected and matured for us by Giorgio Carrero. It's also available via our website. I'd like to thank Giorgio again for taking the time to show me around his incredible cathedral of cheese, and to thank you all for listening. Goodbye.